There's nothing better than feeling comfortable in your own shoes. And that doesn't mean flopping down on the couch with bunny slippers. Maybe you're a parent raising a little rock star, or a tech nomad working from anywhere and jumping from one thing to the next. Whoever you are, Allbirds wants you to be comfortable in your actual shoes too. Their wool runners, pipers, and loungers are designed for a level of coziness that makes you feel like you can do anything. You might even forget you're wearing them. And their shoes are so stylish, they go perfectly with a wear whatever I want attitude. Allbirds is all about loving Mother Nature too, because no one wants to leave a bad footprint. Each shoe is carefully crafted from natural materials that tread lightly on our planet. From ZQ certified merino wool to a bouncy midsole made from sweet foam, the world's first carbon negative EVA material made from sugarcane. So get comfortable in your shoes. Get to know the wool runners, pipers, and loungers at allbirds.com. That's allbirds.com.
Let's go out to the guest line right now and welcome in a man that knows a thing or two about the Dallas Cowboys. And he won 3 Super Bowls with them, was a multiple-time Pro Bowler. And now Daryl Moose Johnson, who's been calling games for years on Fox, is the Executive Vice President of Football Operations for the USFL. And you could get tickets, the usfl.com/ticket-hub. And that includes matchups in Detroit, Birmingham, Canton, and Memphis. Moose, appreciate the time. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I've been good. How you doing, Zach?
Well, I've been fantastic. So another year of the USFL. We know last year was successful. Birmingham winning it all. Just what are you kind of feeling as you get ready in a month to embark on another journey here?
Yeah, it's a little bit different this year. It's kind of odd. You know, we had all 8 teams in the single hub in Birmingham last year. So it was very, very busy. A little bit chaotic, and getting ready for this season, it's been a much more manageable pace. But the challenge this year will be having, you know, the 4 hubs total, 2 teams in each hub spread across, you know, kind of the center part of the country, Birmingham, Memphis, Canton, Ohio, and Detroit, Michigan. So, you know, not getting a chance to see everybody that you worked so hard with last year is kind of disappointing. So, you know, we get to jump on some Zoom calls to catch up once in a while as we're doing some of the day-to-day grind in the business. So, but it's going to be fun. Looking forward to it. We've had Skip Holtz here, you know, getting ready with his staff, and they're excited to have an opportunity to defend that first championship.
What was your favorite part of last year?
My favorite part was the progression from week one all the way to the championship game in Canton, Ohio, and really the opportunity to have our first, you know, playoff series and championship game at Tom Benson Field at the Hall of Fame. Was something that was really, really special for us. And, you know, we had Jimmy Johnson come in and he addressed all four teams in our playoffs. You know, during that week, we wanted it to be something special for the guys to show them how much we appreciated all the hard work that went into year one in the USFL. And it couldn't have come off any better. We had some really good games, you know, had a little bit of an upset there with Philadelphia, who was a team that was probably playing. Houston and Philadelphia were probably playing the best football down the stretch. Philadelphia was able to qualify for the playoffs. Houston was not, and they knocked off New Jersey. And really, you know, truth be told, if Case Cookus doesn't break his leg in the championship game, I think that's going to be a real nail-biter coming down to the end. So I think that was the most enjoyable thing for me, was, you know, to see where everything started, to see how much time and energy and passion was put into it by everybody, you know, players, coaches, staff, you know, league staff, and to watch us grow from the time we walked into training camp through the course of the regular season, and to be able to crown that first champion in the USFL at the Hall of Fame was just awesome.
I think the neat part about it, Daryl Moose Johnston, is like I'm programmed right, NFL, college football, that's my football, but not everyone can get to the NFL or not everyone has the easiest path to get to the NFL. I think giving guys more opportunities to extend their professional football career and maybe find a path to get back to the NFL has to be a neat part for you.
It really does. It really does. It's so hard today, and you don't know what the circumstances are. You know, it to see, you know, somebody like, you know, Kevontae Turpin, you know, take advantage of a second opportunity and maximize that was great. One of the guys that I'm excited to see this year, a couple of guys, you know, Kingston Davis and Mark Thompson, you know, 2 running backs. Kingston's with New Jersey, Mark is with Houston. He was there last year, but he'd been out of football for 2 years. And I think that there's an opportunity maybe for him to get to the next level. So you never know, timing, circumstance, you know, whatever the situation was for some of these young men and why they didn't make it to the NFL, to be able to provide that alternative route to get back there. It's something very special to us. And one of the things we're really looking at this year is, you know, kind of our first collegiate draft class. You know, we drafted 10 players per team back on February 21st. So we've got 10 players on each of our teams that have access to the rights to these players. And, you know, do these guys choose to go through that draft process, which is something that we encourage. You know, you've worked so hard to have that opportunity to be drafted in the NFL. And if you think you still have that chance to fulfill that childhood dream, then please go chase that. But if it doesn't work out for you, you know, we've got a place for you here in the USFL, and, you know, we've got 80 new names and new faces that we're excited to see that could come our way, you know, post-draft time in the NFL.
Talking to Moose, Darryl Moose Johnston here with us. Aaron Rodgers today basically told the entire world he intends to play for the Jets. What are your expectations with it looking like Rodgers heading over to the Big Apple?
I think it's going to be interesting. We had the Jets a couple of times last season, and really it was the quarterback position that was the challenging part for that team. You know, Robert Saleh and his staff have done a great job on the defensive side of the ball, you know, kind of building that team. You know, they had both of the rookie of the years last year on the offensive and defensive side of the ball, so they've got some good young talent. They've got a good offensive line. They've got some good running backs. The wide receiver position is growing and maturing. There's a lot of good pieces in place, and Aaron Rodgers is one of those types of quarterbacks that, you know, you refer to as the high tide quarterback, right? He raises all ships. So everybody on that offensive side of the ball is going to get a little better with Aaron Rodgers at the helm. So I think it's going to be interesting. I really do. I don't know if they were just that one player away, but there was so much inconsistency with the quarterback position last year for the Jets that if Aaron Rodgers is healthy for all 17 games, it's going to be interesting to see how much pressure the Jets can put on the Bills.
Yeah, and I just wonder how far they could take it, because this is a positive day if you're a fan of the Jets. But Rodgers, you know, 2-3 years ago, MVP of the league back-to-back years, had home field advantage, and that offense left you wanting more up against Tampa Bay and San Francisco in the playoffs. So, like, I look at Rodgers, I just don't expect him to win another Super Bowl because it's been so many years.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at that San Francisco game, and it was really special teams that was the downfall that day. You know, sometimes, you know, coaches, head coaches and quarterbacks, you know, they get too much of the credit and they get too much of the blame when things go well or things go wrong. There's a lot of things that you can sit back and look at if you were to go back to that Tampa Bay game and then that San Francisco game. You know, I would have expected Aaron Rodgers to have more than one Super Bowl championship at this time. You know, he's got incredible numbers. He'll be a Hall of Famer. And it's surprising to see him sitting there, not only with just the one, but just how few opportunities there were there when they were in such great position on so many occasions. So, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, how much gas is left in that tank. You know, a change at this stage of somebody's career, there's mixed results there, but maybe this is something that really invigorates Aaron Rodgers, and he embraces it and has, you know, a lot of the key pieces in place to help support him. It's not a game that's won by just adding one player. You know, how does that player fit in? What is the chemistry? What is the culture in that building that Robert Saleh and his staff have installed, and how well does Aaron Rodgers fit into that? So there's going to be a lot of carryover. There's going to be a lot of commonality, you know, because Matt LaFleur coming out of a lot of those similar situations in Green Bay, that's going to be familiar. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of connections when you talk about some of these coaching trees that have been intertwined from these franchises.
Darryl Moose Johnston, how did you react to the news today that Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys are no more?
I've been busy all day here trying to get ready for player arrival tomorrow, so I had not heard that one. But when you go with Tony Pollard with the franchise tag, there's obviously a transition that's going to be had, and obviously Ezekiel with the contract that he had, you know, is he going to take less? Does he still feel like there's more in the tank for him? And maybe a similar situation to Aaron Rodgers. You know, we remember and we're grateful for everything that Ezekiel Elliott did as Cowboy fans, but perhaps this is an opportunity for him to go out and find, you know, that opportunity at this stage of his career where he finds a role, you know, similar to what he had in Dallas. You know, I still think, you know, in the beginning of the year, he was running very physically. You know, there was a, you know, an uptick the last years. It's just the ability to stay healthy. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, the running back position has become, you know, maybe an undervalued position in the NFL now. And we see it so much by committee is because when you have that lead guy, when you have that every down back, it takes a toll. And especially the way that Ezekiel Elliott ran the football, he was a very physical behind the pad runner. Those hits, they take little pieces from you on the backside of your career as they start to accumulate. So, yeah, it's a sad day for Cowboy fans. I think everybody respects and appreciates everything he did for the franchise. And, you know, I think I echo probably everybody's sentiments where we're sad to see him go, but we wish him all the best.
Back-to-back years, they've had 12 wins in the regular season and then heartbreak in the postseason, both times at the hands of the 49ers. Do you think the Cowboys are close to getting over that hump and getting back to a Super Bowl?
I think it's going to be interesting with Mike McCarthy back calling the plays. You know, it's been a long time with that same offense. You know, Kellen Moore was under Scott Linehan, so there was a lot of consistency there, and I understand why with Dak Prescott coming in and growing in that system and not wanting to change at that point. But I think that Dak, at this stage of his career, it's going to be an easy transition for him. I expect Mike, you know, to have great conversations with Dak Prescott and find out everything that he liked, you know, from Kellen Moore's system, incorporate that into what they're going to do this year. But for me, I'm excited to see what Dallas does, you know, with Mike McCarthy at the helm, you know, calling the plays, building his offense, and pair that, you know, with what Dan Quinn brings on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, they're close. They're very close. They had the moment last year at 19-12. You know, for Dak Prescott, that was his moment. That was his opportunity to join the Troy Aikman, the Roger Staubachs, you know, those great franchise quarterbacks in Dallas Cowboy history with a drive that takes you down and ties that game, and then you lead your team to a victory, and you get to go to the NFC Championship game and maybe continue that journey. So I know that it was a disappointing outcome for him. I know that was a bitter pill on that drive, I really feel that the right pieces are in place there. I think that everybody's going to come back motivated. I think everybody understands the window concept, you know, in that franchise, and you're seeing transition right now. You know, Ezekiel Elliott leaving the franchise. You know, how much longer is Tyron Smith a part of that franchise? You know, you're starting to lose some of the key guys of those great teams over the last 5 to 8 years, 10 years.
Last thing I'll ask you, Darryl Moose Johnson, what's your guess on what happens here with the Lamar Jackson situation? He's allowed to get a deal done with another team, and the Ravens could either match it or let him walk for 2 first-round picks. When it comes to week one and you're calling games in the fall, do you think Lamar will still be on the Ravens?
I think that that's going to be a very hard decision for Baltimore. I think it's really, really hard when you have somebody who's meant so much for your franchise, you know, to walk away without fulfilling the ultimate goal in the NFL, which is winning a Super Bowl championship. So the one thing for me, looking at the last couple of years, is you need your quarterback to be at his best at the end of the regular season going into the playoffs. And in the last 2 years, Lamar Jackson has been hurt. And I think that that's something that's going to weigh heavily on this decision. And when you look at transitioning out of that and you get 2 first-round draft picks to start the rebuild, to move away from Lamar Jackson, you know, that is going to be something that's going to be very tempting for the Baltimore Ravens. But I think the biggest thing for me, looking at that situation, and I think it's a situation that every quarterback has to understand is your health in getting through the season, and just seeing how that impact, you know, what it did with Chicago and Justin Fields when he's not in the lineup, you know, as dynamic as he is, you know, when Patrick Mahomes is not healthy, you know, in Kansas City, you know, what that does to him. And you know, for Baltimore the last 2 seasons to be in a position to really kind of get into the playoffs and make a run and to lose Lamar at that time, you know, that has to be very, very frustrating for them.
Darryl Moose Johnson, thanks so much. Good luck with your number 2 to the USFL, and thanks so much for doing this.
You got it, Zach. Thank you.
There you go. We'll take a timeout. Good stuff with Moose Johnson. when we do come on back, what will the return be for Aaron Rodgers and the inevitable trade between the Jets and Packers? Does really either side have more leverage than the other? And also, there is one running back we are wondering about his future, not named Zeke Elliott, that now we have an answer on. We'll tell you who that running back is when we come on back.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So some movement on the running back market. We did know that last night David Montgomery is signing with the Detroit Lions. So that did set up the eventual divorce between Jamal Williams and the Detroit Lions. He was a free agent. So Williams, who led the NFL in rushing touchdowns last year, was 17. He'll be on the move. And now we do have a landing spot for him. And Hickey, I know running backs, it's always bizarre in the price tag, and we don't end up seeing running backs get as much as you probably think they will. But coming off a career year, I would have thought that it would have been more than $4 million a year for Jamal Williams.
I would have agreed. I mean, the guy's a touchdown machine. I know a lot of them are, you know, get down to the 3-yard line, then you're bringing these more of a bruiser.
He only got $8 million in guaranteed money, fully guaranteed money. And by the way, let me not bury the lead. He's signing with the Saints, which is a good move by New Orleans, who we know brought in Derek Carr this offseason. And you have Alvin Kamara, but Alvin Kamara with his legal situation, we don't know how many games he's going to miss this year, but it's going to be a certain amount. There's definitely going to be some games that he's going to miss this season with the suspension that was kind of punted down the road, and we'll eventually find out what that's going to be. But it's a 3-year deal, according to Ian Rappaport, for $12 million with $8 million fully guaranteed. I'm a little bit surprised, and I know the Jets went after Fletcher Cox, and then Fletcher Cox ended up taking a hometown discount on a 1-year deal to stay in Philadelphia. Now Joe Douglas, GM of the Jets, knows Fletcher from their time together in Philadelphia, so maybe that's why he was considering the Jets. And also, oh yeah, by the way, Aaron Rodgers is joining them, so maybe that made Fletcher Cox consider the Jets a little bit more. But I'm surprised, and I talked about this yesterday, I thought Jamal Williams playing with Rodgers first 4 years of his career could have found a way in New York, especially when New York, they have Breece Hall, who's coming off an injury but looks like to be a tremendous back. But I don't think they love any of those other options. They tried to bring in James Robinson. It didn't work out from the Jaguars. Obviously, they like Michael Carter. I don't think they love him, because if they loved him, they would not have drafted Breece Hall in the second round. So I'm surprised, for only $4 million a year and $8 million fully guaranteed, that the Jets didn't bring in Jamal Williams.
I agree, especially when you see the list, whether you want to call it a wish list, a demand list. That's been debated about the last 24 hours or so. You would think a guy who's really good in the locker room, who, again, has familiarity with Aaron Rodgers, and who could bring a nice goal line presence and punch those, you know, handoffs in from the inside the 5-yard line in on a consistent basis, it's a guy you want on your team.
So Montgomery going to the Lions, Jamal Williams going to the Saints. And right now off the board, I don't have the details of the contract, but the Carolina Panthers have their next running back, and that is going to be Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders leaving the Eagles. The Eagles yesterday got Rashad Penny basically for nothing. It was a very small contract. I would imagine that the Eagles are going to make another move somewhere at the running back position. I know Jalen Hurts does phenomenal job running the football in addition to all the passing touchdowns that he has. But you knew that Miles Sanders was on his way out in Philadelphia, and now he's going to the Carolina Panthers. You know, that division, that NFC South, it's weird to say it's intriguing, because usually, like, intrigue, you're like, oh, you have high expectations. Like, you look at the AFC East. That's intriguing this year. You got three teams that should have double-digit wins when you look at the Dolphins, the Jets, and then also the Buffalo Bills. But you look at the NFC South, in a weird way, I'm intrigued by it, because the most pressure to win that division is the Saints, because you have the best quarterback in Derek Carr. The Panthers, though, now have the number one overall pick, and I would imagine that they will start their quarterback that they draft game one, but you do have Andy Dalton there if you need a place over for 3-4 games. If it's C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, start him game one. Don't do what the Steelers did, waiting on Kenny Pickett and putting Mitch Trubisky out there. But the Panthers have a good defense. And offensively, we'll see what pieces they add. But you will have a number one overall pick. You look at Tampa Bay, not that I love Baker Mayfield, but in 2020, he did have a good season. The Browns were in the playoffs. And he goes to a spot on a one-year, I think it was an $8 million deal, $8.5 million deal, which is a good landing spot for him. Even though Tampa Bay is in a transition, there's not a lot of pressure on Tampa Bay because not a lot of people believe in the regime. But if you're Baker, you get to start, which is a good thing, which it wasn't a lock that you were going to be a starter next year. And I guess there will be a competition between him and Kyle Trask. I would think, I'm going to go on a limb here, that Baker Mayfield's going to be able to beat out Kyle Trask. But you have Chris Godwin and also Mike Evans on that team. I know the rest of the roster isn't all that great, and they have fallen greatly since winning that Super Bowl 3 years ago. But I look at Baker landing in Tampa. It's a good spot, and it does close the gap a little bit on the Saints and everybody else. Like, either the Saints, Panthers, or Bucks, one of those three teams are going to win the division. And then you got Atlanta, who they got a whole lot of work to do, and we don't even know who's going to be the quarterback for Atlanta this year.
It's, yes, intriguing, I think, is a good word, because they're, I think they're fun teams. Like, I'm interested, and I am genuinely excited to see how Baker Mayfield can fit in Tampa Bay. Because, again, you know me, I've been hyping up the Buccaneers and trying to have them, you know, instead of resetting or rebuilding, kind of make a push to go win this division. Again, they've not really been doing that. But at least with Baker, you have a chance with some of the offensive weapons you just mentioned. Now you get Miles Sanders, who's, I think, a really good weapon, offensive weapon for Frank Reich and whatever young quarterback they're going to have to work with.
He's solid. I think he's a little overrated, if we're being fair.
Miles Sanders?
Yeah, I don't think he's... Miles Sanders had a good season last year. He's a little inconsistent for me. And there's a lot of times when I watch Miles Sanders, and I know he just had a very good season where he went for over 1,200 yards. I think that was more of a product of the system. But there's a lot of times I look at Miles Sanders, I'm like, oh, he should be a lot better than what he's actually doing. This was his best year. So it gives you some optimism. But the first 3 years of his career, it was like, okay, you were good, but I thought you'd be a lot better.
I think he has some good talent still, and I like the fact that he's a dual threat in terms of running the ball and especially catch the ball in the backfield, especially right now when you look at the current construction of the Panthers' wide receiving core.
You got to run the ball a lot there.
Yeah, it's not exactly a murderer's row for whatever you know pick they get at number one. So at least from that aspect of being a threat in the passing game for Miles Sanders, I like that. So at least you get a nice weapon to use at your disposal that, you know, again, can help maybe ease the transition a little bit compared to right now. Again, it's great that the Panthers traded up, and it's great that they got that, you know, they're going to get their guy, but they also now got to start to help their young quarterback, especially when you ship out DJ Moore.
And by the way, I may have sold the Falcons short. You know why? Because our guy, Taylor Ham Heineke, is landing with the Atlanta Falcons. And I would think he's going to start over Desmond Ridder. Or you will at least see Taylor Ham Heineke get a decent amount of starts this year, because I'm not a big believer in Desmond Ridder, even though he did a really good job at Cincinnati when they got to the college football playoff.
I would bet Ridder starting week one, but I would agree we'll see Taylor Heineke for, I would say, bare minimum 5 starts.
So now you think Lamar Jackson back in with the Ravens next year? Because that was a potential landing spot for Lamar if the Falcons wanted to get,
I don't,
get in on
listen, Taylor Heineke, and there's actually a decent contract. Was it 2 years for $20 million, I think? I don't think Taylor Heineke takes him out of the Lamar Jackson running just yet. That's for sure.
Wow, bold take, man.
I know. We're going out on
limb. You're really
there.
Going out on a
Falcons
limb.
Are still in the Lamar sweepstakes.
Also, the Ezekiel Elliott stuff, it just shows you why you shouldn't draft a running back anymore in the first round, unless if that's your only need. Like Buffalo this year, if they somehow had Bijan Robinson available, you could go draft him. That's that you need a running back, another running back on that team. But when you look at someone like Zeke, who went 6 overall, you know, I know Christian McCaffrey's wonderful, but now he's on a different team. He went in the top 10. You see so many guys that go out of the first round running backs. And I know Travis Etienne had a really good season after the injury, and Najee Harris has been a fine player for Pittsburgh. But look at all the guys right now in the league. Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Joe Mixon. You go on and on and on with running backs in the NFL that go second round or later. And also, you just never know how long the career is going to be. Like Ezekiel Elliott, when he got into the league right away, he was dominant, right? He was the face of the Dallas Cowboys, right? America's team, the Dallas Cowboys. And then, like, really the last 2 years or so, 3 years or so, you kind of knew that Zeke wasn't as great as he once was. And the drop-off when you go from being great to then being knocked down a few pegs and you don't have that explosiveness anymore as a running back, it's very alarming. And it was clear for the last 2 years almost that Tony Pollard, when given the opportunity, was the better back. And I had a feeling, right, when Zeke talked about restructuring and Jerry talked about restructuring, that Zeke still looks at himself as a star. And it was just going to be too difficult to restructure that contract, and Zeke wasn't going to take the price tag down. You know, Zeke will land somewhere, but he's not going to be a bell cow back, and he'll land somewhere just because of name, right, and what his star presence once was. But this is a guy that's 27. Like, if he goes and plays 2-3 more years in the NFL, you know, I still think he'd be productive. Like, he had 12 touchdowns this year. Like, he'd still be solid. But I'd be surprised if we're talking about Zeke, like, 2-3 years from now, really being a relied upon piece in the NFL. Because you have a Cowboys team that just lost Amari Cooper, right? And they were running the ball a ton with Zeke and Tony Pollard. And you saw that Zeke wasn't all that anymore. And if Zeke wants big money, he ain't going to get it.
Zeke and Derrick Henry are the last of a dying breed of the bell cow workhorse running back. I know the last, 2 years, basically it's been a split between Zeke and Tony Pollard, but you look at the first 4 or 5 years of Zeke's career, he was the guy. Right? Yeah. He was the guy with their feet in Zeke. He was the MVP, the offense. There's discussions, and I'll be honest, I was in the camp, pay Zeke over Dak.
Jerry Jones said they still run through Zeke this year, which was crazy.
That's right. Back at August, even maybe into the season, he was saying that. But you're seeing now, it's running back by committee. Even if you got a guy and you want to draft a running back that's just an outstanding talent in the first round, it's still okay, you can do that. But it has to be later in the first round, like I said, a team that really has every other need for the most part filled. But also, too, it's still a work, you know, you're sharing the workload because you can't give a running back anymore 25 carries, 5 catches, you know, basically 30 touches a game.
You got to have
4 or 5 years
to
make them, you know, think they're going to last.
Yeah, you got to have presence on the ground. Like, you got to run the football. Like, the Chiefs can still run the football, but they don't have a bell cow back. Like, you look at the last 10 Super Bowl champions, Kansas City. Like, what, Isaiah Pacheco was their best back this year? But they used so many different guys. The Rams didn't have a bell cow back. Tampa Bay, I know Leonard Fournette was really good, but they used a bunch of different pieces. Kansas City, who was it? Damian Williams, like, could have won the Super Bowl MVP. And you haven't heard from him since. New England has done running back by committee for years. The Eagles, they went through a bunch of backs that year. LeGarrette Blount, Jay Ajayi, Corey Clement. You look at Denver. You know, Denver didn't have a bell cow back. Seattle was probably the last team that had a bell cow back. And that was Marshawn Lynch. And you're going back to 2014. I mean, you look back at Seattle, it's like you think about the running back first. You think about the defense from those teams of the Legion of Boom. So the idea of the bell cow back, I'm not saying you don't need someone to run the football anymore because you do. But you could go with 2-3 guys and you have a dual tack approach. And I think that is successful. So we'll see where Ezekiel Elliott does land. We'll talk about Rodgers' compensation next. Bart Winkler is going to join us.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
Bart Winkler always does a great job when I'm on vacation and fills in on this show. You can also hear him other times on CBS Sports Radio, and he has his own show, the Bart Winkler Show, which is a daily podcast on Blue Wire Pods. He joins us right now. Bart, I wanted to bring you on today because I know Aaron Rodgers is your BFF. How did you react to the news today on the Pat McAfee show and how he handled that for about an hour?
Well, I am excited to be on the same show with John Kuhn because he's coming up. We both owe our careers to him, but I'm willing to drag Aaron's name through the mud, and he's not, so I'd like to start. I'm tired of this, and I think that Aaron has lost control of the narrative a little bit. And so he was trying to get it back today. And it just comes off pathetic and foolish and embarrassing and depressing and sad. And I know the Jets fans are going to be happy because they're going to get, even Rodgers in whatever state he comes in, is going to be better than anything they've had in the last 30 years. But I think they are getting a guy who doesn't know what he wants. The only thing that that he can be fueled by his revenge. He found a way to get revenge, and he's going to go to New York and win 7 games, and it's going to be a nightmare for them. So that's where I'm at right now. No hard feelings, of course, with all due respect.
Well, I think they'll make the playoffs, but here's where I agree with you. I think the drama he's selling right now, I don't buy. If you're annoyed that the Packers said they'll let you make the decision and then something changed once he came out of the cave, well, you could have told them, because when you went into the cave, you're at 90% retirement, which I don't believe, but that's what he claims. And then when also the A.J. Hawk follow up with him and go, oh, would you have come back if they wanted you back? And he said no. So he didn't want to go back, or he was going to retire. Why didn't he just tell the Packers that from the jump?
Because he wants to be wanted, and he wants to be in control of the story. Aaron Rodgers is there's so many things that bothered me with today. And I think the thing that I keep coming back to is when he blasted the report about the wish list for his players. The wish list. Diana Russini put out a tweet that said, Aaron Rodgers has a wish list. He would like the Jets to contact so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so.
And one already signed in Lazard.
There's reports about Cobb. But Rodgers, this is what he does. He takes that report and says, that's false. And you say, why is it false? The Jets went and signed Alan Lazard. They're talking to these guys. Rodgers then admitted that he said, yeah, I recommended, you know, I talked about some of these guys to see if they – because what Aaron's saying is, I never wrote on a piece of paper wish list and sent it to the Jets, so therefore it is false. It's like nobody can ever be right about him. He's always – even though the media and Schefter and Rappaport and all these guys, they've been like 99.8% right on all this reporting for 3 years. But Rodgers will find that one little word that's not placed in the right part and say the whole thing's a lie. It is disgusting, and too many people in this country do it. And I don't know what kind of emotional state I'm in. This is very stupid. This is ending the same way it ended with the other guy 16 years ago. Rodgers, I think, thought that he's good enough. He called himself the best player in Packers history, which is fine, maybe, but who says that? So Rodgers, he thought he was good enough that he could leave on his own terms. He thought he had tenure. He thought, I'm leaving when I want to leave. This franchise will do what I want to do when I want to do it. And all veterans should be the same way. He thinks the Packers moving on from guys too early is not right. It's not the way to do business. And what I was saying on my podcast, The Bart Winkler Show, thank you for the plug, is that, look, my career has been up and down. There's been times where I thought I had a job and I didn't. There's been times where I had a job and then I didn't. And I never have any hard feelings because I know that's the business. I know what business I'm in. And Rodgers has to know what business he's in. He's in a business where guys get cut all the time. Guys don't see the end of their contracts all the time. And it's all great for player empowerment and all that stuff. And I get he's trying to change the world. But he's got to understand that the thing that happened that got him a starting job was eventually going to happen to him someday. And he's having a hard time dealing with that. And now we have to sit on the other end of the couch while he eats the ice cream and cries to us. And it's annoying. And so good luck, Jets.
Bart Winkler, what do you think the Packers will get back for him? Because that's the only other thing that you have to iron out here.
I don't know. I think so. The Packers could have got a bunch for him last year. So now they're like, well, geez, we got to at least save face. I think the Packers are fine trading him for a late pick. I don't think they care. Just move on from him. Hey, clear some cap space. We're fine with that. We've got Jordan Love. Let's move on, okay? And the Packers would be probably fine with a package that would get made fun of by their fans and media, and the Jets would say, ha-ha, we fleeced them. And so the Packers are trying to, like, save face a little bit because you can't just trade Aaron Rodgers for a sixth-round pick when all these other guys are getting traded for first. Now there's other things into it with how terrible that contract is and stuff. And I'm trying to figure out in this case who has the leverage. It seems like the Packers have some leverage because who are the Jets going to sign, right? And Rodgers wants to go there. So it seems like the Packers hold the cards. But do the Packers want to make this trade before the draft? Because if they want to make it before the draft, well, then suddenly the Jets get a little more leverage.
Well, Bart, that's why this entire thing is stupid, Bart.
don't care to make it before the draft, then the Packers get a bunch of leverage.
That's why this entire thing is stupid, Bart, because this could have been figured out a month ago. Rodgers didn't want to go back, and the Packers didn't want him back. Like, it should not have got to this point. It's just so dumb.
Well, but it's always dumb. It's been 3 years now of Rodgers saying, I'll make my decision quick, and then him not making a decision, and then him popping up on all these things, whether it's the Kentucky Derby or the Aubrey Marcus show or whatever, and then not saying anything.
Golf
and then
events,
finally
yeah.
We're all like, oh, Rodgers on McAfee today. No, he's not. Then he wasn't. And then Rodgers is on McAfee, and then he says, I'm not going to say anything. Here's 20 minutes of me talking about, I mean, just get to the point. And I just don't understand how people are like, okay with, it's so grating. And no matter how good he was as a football player, this guy eats up way too much of my time, way too much of my life. Yes, it does help my numbers when there's Rodgers news and I'm excited for a good show tomorrow to be posted, but I would rather just move on and see something new. As crazy as that sounds as a Packer fan.
Jordan Love, Bart Winkler, next year will be what for the Packers?
I think he's going to be the next guy, and I think he's going to be here for a while. I think that Rodgers' endorsement of Love is true. And I think that, to me, what tells me Love is good is that Rodgers didn't let him see the field this year. Rodgers played until the bitter end. 4-8, injured, could have sat down. Nobody would have cared, but then we would have seen 5 weeks of Jordan Love. And then we would have all seen, oh, okay, Love's ready. But Rodgers would have lost control of the narrative. So he played very pedestrian numbers, didn't have more than a touchdown in any of the last five games, won thanks to his defense. I think Rodgers playing through an injury last year wasn't about trying to make the playoffs. It was about trying to keep Jordan Love on the bench, because he knows if we would have saw him, none of this narrative would have been in his control, as he's trying so desperately to hang on to it now.
Do me a favor. You need to calm down a little bit. I enjoyed playing the role of the therapist today. Go to fourth base tonight. It will be on me. All right? You got to get a good meal tonight.
All right. I will do that. It's just a pop fly from the ballpark, as you know, in Milwaukee. Also, Bucks are winning the championship. They pretty much decided that on their road trip. So I'm looking forward to talking with you all throughout the summer as well.
Yeah, I agree the Bucks will win the championship this year. Your prediction about the Jets only winning 7 games, that I don't buy. So we'll agree on something to end the interview, and we'll keep it positive with the Milwaukee Bucks. Bart, be well, all right?
I love you.
Love you too. There he is, the great Bart Winkler. That was awesome. The first 5 minutes, Hickey, I felt like we were talking to someone that has just been broken up with, holding like a glass of wine, and they're trying to figure out how the heck we got here. They're fine with the breakup, but then they're also annoyed with the breakup, but they knew the breakup was coming. So you bring a little vino into the conversation.
That was great. That was great.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. More Rodgers next.
There's nothing better than feeling comfortable in your own shoes. And that doesn't mean flopping down on the couch with bunny slippers. Maybe you're a parent raising a little rock star, or a tech nomad working from anywhere and jumping from one thing to the next. Whoever you are, Allbirds wants you to be comfortable in your actual shoes too. Their wool runners, pipers, and loungers are designed for a level of coziness that makes you feel like you can do anything. You might even forget you're wearing them. And their shoes are so stylish, they go perfectly with a wear whatever I want attitude. Allbirds is all about loving Mother Nature too. Because no one wants to leave a bad footprint. Each shoe is carefully crafted from natural materials that tread lightly on our planet. From ZQ-certified Merino wool to a bouncy midsole made from sweet foam, the world's first carbon-negative EVA material made from sugarcane.